Now on 4, Root and Branch examines the position of black and Asian workers.
The annual Trade Union Congress displays its traditional image of brotherhood and togetherness. But when the TUC meets again this autumn, will all the old acquaintances be there? A group of black trade unionists are already planning their own breakaway national conference.
As black workers, we have to demand that certain things are put right immediately, or else there will be problems within the movement, and there will be problems in society generally. We are saying that we can wait no longer, basically, for these changes, that these changes have got to be radical, and they've got to be immediate.
The black trade unionist solidarity movement's demand for immediate and radical change stems from the conviction that the predominantly white unions will not act for their black members. The first case that they've taken on board is that of Malkit Singh Benning. He's accused both his employers, the Greater London Council, and his union, the Electrical, Electronic, Telecommunications and Plumbing Union, of racial discrimination, which left him with only two-thirds of his white colleagues' earnings. He's a highly qualified electrician, with a City and Guild certificate in electronics and experience with both the Post Office and Ford's. In 1980, he was offered a job as an in-house electrician with the GLC.
I'm probably the best qualified electrician in the department, and another electrician started a week after me, who is not qualified or nowhere as near qualified as myself, and yet this electrician was promoted for diagnostic payments, shift allowance and everything else you can think of, so he can earn, say, about £11,000-£12,000 a year. The same people, the certain few people who earn three times as much as me, unqualified electricians, and the other electricians who didn't fit in with the system, they could not earn any money, they could only do basic hours and earn basic wage. The reasons I wasn't getting these perks, or the lucrative work as they call it, is there was only one reason. I think there were certain members of in the GLC who were racist.
After 18 months or so, while management did nothing, Malkit, or Michael as he's known at work, decided to take his complaints to his union, the EEPTU. He approached shop steward Charles Kirsting.
I contacted our union by phone, and then I wrote to them. Eventually by recorded delivery letter, and I still haven't had any reply since then.
And that was about a year ago?
That's about a year ago.
Help came from an unexpected source, the GLC itself. Under pressure from its own ethnic minorities unit, which had received similar complaints from a West Indian electrician, the GLC set up an internal inquiry.
I went back to the union and asked them for representation at the inquiry and backing. And I wrote letters, was typed out, copies of which I still got, no reply. Week, 2 weeks later, I sent another letter to the head of, the area office, and to the area official, recorded delivery, and I had no reply. And then, in the end, I eventually wrote to the head secretary, Frank Chappell, and up to today, I have not read a reply from him. That's about 2, 3, 4 months ago I wrote to him and didn't even get a reply from the General Secretary.
What happened when the inquiry opened? Did the union send a representative?
Yes. When the inquiry opened, because I couldn't get any representation and I couldn't represent myself, I approached the new organisation called the BTUSM, Black Trade Union Solidarity Movement. I asked them for advice and representation and backing, and told them that I approached my own union, they won't entertain it, and the BTUSM finally agreed to represent me, and then when the inquiry started, the EETPU wanted to have an observer there to observe what's, you know, independent observer. Well, the independent observer they sent them happened to be a senior shop steward, just before the inquiry came down, and he threatened me. He said, if you still at the ETBU, get the sack from the GLC, and that'll be your lot unless you drop these now.
Malkit Benning and his colleague did not drop their complaints. The panel of inquiry met last October and spent 5 days going through a mass of evidence. Their findings have just been published.
This Greater London Council statement is something of a landmark in race relations. In a hard-hitting and uncompromising report, the GLC's internal inquiry into allegations of racial discrimination by Mr. Benning and his West Indian colleague concludes that the evidence presented on each individual allegation fell far short of that required to prove that discrimination had occurred. However, when considered as a whole, the picture was one where it would be very difficult for an independent inquirer to conclude other than that direct discrimination had occurred. And this means that the GLC looked at the whole spirit behind existing race relations legislation, not just the strict letter of the law.
I think what the inquiry has shown is that that old practices can work to the disadvantage of ethnic minorities, and that we all need to be re-examining the existing ways of working within all large organisations to ensure that racially discriminatory practices and attitudes are being rooted out.
If your findings are implemented, the union will have to be more cooperative. How will you achieve that?
I don't think my relationship or our relationship with the ETU will change as a result of this inquiry. They're still an official union that we have to have dealings with on a day-to-day basis. I think the inquiry will have put right certain things in a particular department affecting two black workers, and that was the purpose of the inquiry. It wasn't an inquiry looking into the whole range of issues affecting trade unions and black workers.
Now that the GLC inquiry is complete and the report has come out in your favour, won't it be very difficult to go back and work with these same people that you've complained about?
They're going to feel bitter towards me, but they always have felt bitter because I've tried to ask them for a fair share of the overtime. So there's going to be a lot of hard feelings, but then again, I'm used to them. I've always had them since I've been there.
We asked the EEPTU several times for their comments on the Benning case. On each occasion, they declined to be interviewed. In the event, the case of Malkit Singh Benning turned out to be an almost textbook example of direct, personalised discrimination.
It is argued that racial discrimination is not always a simple matter of black skin equals lower wages. Though, for example, the No Coloureds Need Apply job adverts have long gone, there are still workplaces like this brewery here in Luton where the black is conspicuous by his absence. It's not necessarily that the system of the hiring of labour was designed to exclude blacks, it's simply that it's never been altered to include them. Take this plant. Here there's a workforce of 260 people in an area with a very large black population, something like 14% of the total. So it would be reasonable to expect about 37 or 38 black people to be working here. There are, in fact, two.
Whitbreads, like other large factories in Luton, are of course suffering a recession, which the town as a whole finds hard to accept after the boom years of the 60s. In those days, blacks and Asians were encouraged to settle in this country, ironically by Enoch Powell, amongst others. As health minister, he was just one who recruited numbers of Commonwealth immigrants to do a variety of low-paid jobs. Now, things are different. Unemployment is very high, with about 400 people chasing each job, and that's not including the school leavers. Significantly, the highest proportion of the unemployed is from the ethnic minorities. Over the last 15 years or so, Whitbread's Luton Brewery has become notorious amongst members of the minority groups for what they see as a racist employment policy. Now they're so disillusioned that in recent years they haven't even bothered to apply to Whitbread's for jobs.
I wanted to ask you about the time, I believe a few years ago, when you applied to Whitbread's for a job.
Yes, that's some years ago, actually, when I first came into the country in about 1969. Whitbread's had put an advertiser in the papers, in the local papers,
here in Luton?
In Luton, yes, for a junior laboratory assistant, like, and I applied for it.
A written application,
yes. I had six O-levels, biology, physics, I mean. And, of course, within a couple of days, I got a reply from Whitbread saying that the position was filled.
Why do you say, of course?
Over the years, I've found out, I suppose, that Whitbread do not really employ a lot of either Asian people or something.
Down the road, a group of West Indians in their local pub were even more pessimistic about their chances of getting jobs in general, and jobs at Whitbread's in particular.
The nearest I can get to a Whitbread place is buying their drinks or playing darts and dominoes for them. But going by the factory and see that I want a job, I've got no chance whatsoever. I know at the moment it's very hard to get a job. But if the boys that do have the qualification, I like to see them get the job when they go for a job. For instance, I'll tell you, I went to Baldock 2 weeks ago for a job. I passed the examination with five people. That's 2 weeks ago. And they sent me a letter telling me that the job is full. I went back yesterday to the same employment office, and that job is still on the board. So what is happening now? You're telling me because of my qualification? I'm saying it's because of my color. Now, I mean, I'm getting an old man now. I don't care no more. If I'm doing a job, I'll carry on. But when my son come along and he cannot get a job, what will he do? He'll blow the bloody place up. That's the only thing he can do.
As a secretary of a trades council, for the past 7 years, I have had dozens of complaints about this particular company, Whitbread. And it's partly because of the recruitment policies. I understand from talking to trade unionists at the factory that they have a list where present employees can put the names and of their relatives and friends, and so there's a waiting list of people for work at Whitbread's. And because their employee have been white and white for many, many years, that inevitably those newcomers will be white. We ought to have a system at Whitbread's where the jobs are advertised and that people fill those vacancies irrespective of their race, sex or colour. But that, as far as my knowledge is concerned, and I've lived in the area 20 years and been involved in the trade union movement for 20 years, Whitbread has always had a situation with Whitbread where black workers felt that their recruitment policies were discriminatory. And I believe that Whitbread is one of these companies where the trade union have either been aware of the situation, which have discriminated against black people, and choose to say nothing about it, to ignore it. And as a result, I believe they've got to be blamed. They must share part of the blame.
The union concerned is the Transport and General Workers Union, and their branch secretary is Colin Archer.
So you've got 260 people here?
Yes, correct, yeah.
Don't you find it odd that there are only two black employees in this particular site, when in fact there's a very high black population in Luton?
Not given the history involved with this particular site, no. There's been a lot of things have occurred which have created the present situation.
What sort of things?
We lost 180 people out of a workforce of 360. The company gave us the choice of either losing the 180 or closing the depot in its entirety. We didn't get 180 volunteers. 49 of the people that went redundant were compulsorily made redundant, and the branch has felt morally obligated to those 49 people from that day until now. And we have been in negotiations and discussions with the company, and the company have agreed to offer any jobs that are found to be necessary from now, or from May 81, to those 49 people.
But in these circumstances, it's going to be virtually impossible for any of the black people around here to get into the company, isn't it?
Given the present policy we have of looking after our previous members of our branch, I would have to say yes, within the next couple of years anyway, yeah.
Are you happy with that?
I'm not happy with the situation of redundancy at all. That's about as far as I can say. Being happy about whether coloured people are involved doesn't really come into it. I mean, if a person is qualified for the job, then they'll get the job, but we're not in that position at the present time, I'm afraid.
We did approach Whitbreads, who declined to give us an interview, but they did give us the following statement. We have a long tradition of recruitment through recommendation, i.e. fathers and sons, relations, neighbours, and it has proved an effective source of reliable candidates. In selection for jobs, we make it clear in our handbook for managers that candidates shall be evaluated regardless of race, colour and creed. Our first principle is that they should have the appropriate skills for doing the job. There may be apparent discrimination, but at our London depots, where recruitment by recommendation equally applied, we have recruited a high proportion of coloured staff. They were selected by the same criteria. The trade union has been entirely supportive of these principles, and we have had no approaches to discriminate.
We're not going to be able to retain word of mouth recruitment because it is totally contradictory to the policy of the trade union movement, because we recognise that this is a way of perpetuating a race division. And secondly, of course, it is theoretically illegal under the legislation. Of course, most of these cases don't get uncovered because the complaints don't come forward. But gradually, there is an increasing stream of complaints based on a growing understanding of what word of mouth recruitment means, something which was socially acceptable in the past, but with a mixed community, no longer can be tolerated.
Word of mouth recruitment may not be tolerable to the leadership of the unions, but to many white rank and file members, it's welcomed precisely because it is a protective practice. Protective, that is, to the workers who've always had a job, and to their friends and relatives who get whatever jobs are going. The print shops in Fleet Street are typical.
We've got plenty of white people out of work, so, you know, the way I look at it, it should be whites first.
Do you think that either the unions or the management do discriminate in favour of whites?
Not really. Well, possibly the unions, but...
In what way?
Well, to put their own people in first.
Well, there's more whites, isn't there? More whites than coloured work in here, but I mean, yeah, so it's natural.
Fleet Street is a closed shop, isn't it? I mean, it's passed down from son to, like, from father to son and Dan to Dan. I suppose there isn't many, like, as you could say, black people in the print.
Do you think that's a fair system?
Pardon?
Do you think that's a fair system, the father to son business?
Well, I used to work for hundreds of years. I don't see why it shouldn't still happen like.
But if the job is there, I think they give it to them. It's become an accepted way of life.
Do you think it's right?
The way of course it's right.
The way the system's
working? Well, I mean, if they've got to live here, they've got to have a place to work, haven't they? Got to get money, same as we have.
I don't really know. It's down to the unions, isn't it? Really.
In what way?
I don't know. It's, they get the choice of who does what, you know what I mean?
There's a lot of white people out of work. We got a lot of people on our books, white people, who've been over here for years. These people come over here, what are they paid in? Nothing. And we have.
But although they may not be much in evidence at official demonstrations and meetings, the truth is that proportionately more black workers are paid up union members. This was revealed by the Policy Studies Institute, which in its 1981 report showed that whereas only 36% of white workers are unionised, 48% of black workers are union members. That should make the black members a valuable asset to the trade union movement. And maybe it's what led to the TUC's Black Workers Charter of 1981. Amongst other things, this policy statement called on the unions to remove barriers preventing black workers becoming union officials. But there's still little evidence that the Black Workers' Charter has had much effect. The General Council of the TUC has 43 members, including the General Secretary, and they are all white.
A third of a million places, which would rather more than double.
Why are there so few black trade union officers?
Well, because the democracy of trade unions, generally speaking, is based on majority rule. And therefore, people who stand for positions will have to get some sort of support from somewhere. And it's ridiculous not to recognize that the tendency will always be to vote for a white person if you're white and you're familiar with their attitudes and unfamiliar with the attitudes of the ethnic minorities. So if you just leave democracy where it is, it's inadequate to deal with the problem. Somehow or other, the trade union movement has got to get used to the idea of some kind of quota system.